This podcast is a proud member of the Lamb Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Welcome to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of low-budget cinema.
The sleep of reason gives birth to monsters.
Hi, my name's Chris, and along with Jeff, we're bringing you the very best and worst of horror, sci-fi, post-apocalyptic wasteland, kung fu, and women in prison movies from the 1960s to today. Check us out at reallyawfulmovies.com, part of the Crypt TV family.
Welcome to a special episode of the Really Awful Movies podcast, episode 56B. We're talking Portal to Hell, Rowdy Roddy Piper versus Cthulhu. We're talking with the director, Viviano Caldinelli, and the writer, Matt Watts.
Here we are talking about Portal to Hell, an incredible short film starring the amazing Rowdy Piper, which is premiering on September 12th at TIFF 2015 at the Short Cuts program. I have the honor of sitting here with Viviano Caldinelli, who is the director, and Matt Watts, who is the writer.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
So we'll start with the writer, Matt. Describe the story of Portal to Hell.
The story of Portal to Hell is Jack, a superintendent, who he's a disgruntled superintendent. He's tired, he doesn't really want to be hassled very much, but he has these tenants who are hassling him to do the day-to-day stuff.
As every tenant would do.
And after a series of minor tasks like changing a light bulb and fixing a toaster, he stumbles upon a portal in the basement to Riley, where he has to fight Cthulhu and prevent him from coming into our world and dominating the planet.
Mm-hmm. And what was the genesis of the idea?
I had this idea for, I'm a fan of the movie Overboard. And I thought it would be really.
As am I, but.
I thought it would be great to do like an Overboard, but directed by John Carpenter, like that kind of feel. And I sat on the idea for a while, and then I was talking to Viv on the phone one night, and I was telling him about it, and he said, "Let's do it as a short." So we kind of figured out how to rearrange it for a short. With the idea of using the short to fund a feature. Mm-hmm. So what the short is the feature is more about the female character, the Goldie Hawn type character, and her sort of journey into this building. But it made more sense for the short to be about the superintendent, because you're not going to condense the feature into a short. Right. It from a different angle.
Would that be the Jenny character?
Jeannie. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's Goldie Hawn's real name, was Jeannie, so that was the idea. Mm.
Well, it's interesting because, I mean, ostensibly it's basically, Roddy Piper versus Cthulhu. Roddy Piper playing Jack. Jack the Giant Slayer. I really enjoyed that little poster in Maple Leaf Gardens.
It's in my house now.
Is it really?
Yeah.
It's funny because you talk about Overboard, and I didn't really think about that, but, I mean, besides, man versus mythological Lovecraftian beast, it really is a really sort of charming story of a, gruff, lonely man who's best days are behind him, and we get that sense. He was once a champion boxer, now he's a superintendent with all these people just pissing the shit out of him. And through battling Cthulhu, he sort of finds his purpose, and he finds love.
I'm so glad that comes through, because, I never even, like that was obviously the intention, right? But we've just been inside this thing for so long that the story becomes about Piper and fighting the Cthulhu. So yeah, yes, that's exactly what it's about. It's about a man finding happiness.
Yeah, and you definitely get the sense at the end of it all that he's
he's a changed man.
Yeah.
Hey, we did it.
Dark works.
Yay.
Now, and of course, as you were saying before, we have two towering icons like Piper and Cthulhu. I mean, obviously, that's what's going to draw people to the film, but then they're going to get this really sweet story.
And that was the idea. I mean, it is kind of, on the surface, it does. We're setting it up like a boxing match, but it's not quite that.
Yeah, and I think that's always the way things work, is you find what the big conflict is, you know, and then kind of working around how we kind of shape and tell that story and the minutiae and the arcs and all that kind of stuff, mm-hmm. you know, all throughout the entire process. But yeah, no, it's great that it hits on those smaller levels, and you know, there's small arcs all around and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I think as well,
that's like my character and his fear of heights. There he is. Yeah, great arc.
It's great arc. He overcomes heights.
And we also have to say, he doesn't find a portal to
Neverworld.
It's actually summoned by it. It's incredibly hilarious.
It's Riley.
Yeah.
That he finds the portal to. Mm. But that's also something that was corrected, and I think a lot of, obviously, you know, loyal Lovecraftian, you know, Lovecraft fans kind of, they were kind of chirping about how it's not a portal to hell, it's a portal to Riley and stuff.
It's
like
from
that.
His,
we assess that.
It's supposed to be from Roddy's point of view. Mm-hmm. In one of the earliest drafts of the short, we had this, to try and stay true to Lovecraft, it was narrated by Piper after the fact, mm. in a kind of a deranged, insane state. And the idea was that he's not going to say, I've discovered a portal to Riley in my basement, but I've discovered a portal to hell. Like, he doesn't know what it is. So it was always supposed to be hell from his perspective. Mm-hmm. But you watch it, and obviously, that's not what it is.
Yeah.
And also, it has a better ring to it.
Definitely.
Well, before I ask the American boy, I want to say, how do you account for the enduring popularity of Cthulhu? I mean, even among those who've never read Lovecraft or even heard of Lovecraft, everybody knows Cthulhu.
Or even just the image.
Yeah.
You know? I don't know. It's just something I've known about at an early age and understood and kind of had this, you know, I don't know. Bottom line, I think it's just a really cool fucking monster with great mythos and.
Well, Lovecraft himself, I think a lot of his stuff it seems to be catching fire right now. Mm. It's in the zeitgeist. Partially because I think it's such a broader sense of horror, the cosmic horror stuff. It's like movies like Event Horizon that sort of touch on. There's no easy answer. It's just it's a real fear of the unknown.
Well, I'm like Paul. Also built a huge mythology and stuff.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Really into
Cthulhu. Just seems to be the one that everyone hooks into because it. I don't even know where it started. Like where it really in the last 15 years, there's just been a real kind of like. That's the one. I mean, South Park did the episode with them, and mm-hmm. there's plushies, and I don't know. It just seems to be the identifiable Lovecraftian one. It's like he's the most popular. I mean, we could have done, you know, he fights Yogg Sothoth or something. I don't think people would have cared that much.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, and Dagon's a great example.
Yeah.
The what's his name? Stuart Gordon's Dagon.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, which isn't Dagon. It's a shadow over Innsmouth, but mm-hmm. it's still, you know. Anyway, I don't know, but I do think overall it's sort of like the last great horror writer that people haven't really got on to. Mm-hmm.
So you wrote the script, and how did it get to Vivienne?
Well, no, it was a very collaborative process right from the beginning, because I had outlines for the feature, and then Viv said we should do it as a short. And then I started writing a short and sending him drafts, and he'd give me notes, mm-hmm. and I'd keep carving out the draft and until we had a draft we were happy with, and that was it. He didn't really come on board. He was right there from the beginning.
He was there from the beginning. Yeah.
Okay. It just with the short, I think what we wanted to do was that, like, you know, we didn't want to spread ourselves thin with the feature, mm-hmm. because, you know, we really have big ideas for the feature, and we want to execute it properly, and we don't want to kind of go in small just to get this feature made. Mm-hmm. So we think if we can kind of make a calling card with this short, you know, and hit that out of the park, mm-hmm. and then really, really sell the feature version and not be able, you know, to take any shortcuts with that feature. And you know, hopefully that's what we did to a T. It's really like the short is just the beginning.
Mm-hmm. And it's also, we just wanted to make sure we could nail the tone, right? Like, we wanted to be able to prove the tone as a proof of concept. And obviously, we also wanted to prove Piper and how that's going to be.
I was going to say, when you talk about the feature, I actually get a little wistful. As someone who grew up with, you know, WWF in the 80s, I can't call it WWE. I mean, come on.
No, it's WWF.
And with, you know, Todd Rod being one of my absolute favorites, I mean,
the news of his death really hit me hard, as it did many of us, and yeah. you guys as well. Yeah. And when you see the future, I'm thinking, oh my god, and the future would have had Piper in it, and he would have been fantastic in it, just as he was in the short. And
we really wanted to, because we love Piper. It was so, like, as I started writing it, as we started talking about it, and we talked about people, it was like this kind of always, it's got to be Piper, it's got to be Piper, it's got to be Piper. And then it was, can we get him? It became this whole, like, can we get Piper? Can we? I don't know, but let's just write it for him and we'll see if we can get him. Then we got him. And then it was, we just wanted him to be so good in it. And then he was. And then, so now it's like, it's this really heartbreaking thing where I think, we both think he would have been so proud of it, because I think it's the kind of thing that no one ever really got him to do. Mm-hmm. And I think it shows a side of him that no one really showed. Mm-hmm.
Like, the first thing we did when he came to town, we sat down with him, Matt and I, and we said, we really want you to be Jack. Mm-hmm. We don't want you to be Piper. And I think that's all, you know, a lot of the different things he's been in the last, geez, I don't know how long, I think that was kind of the issue, is people just wanted Piper. They just wanted to freak out. They just wanted that mm-hmm. persona. And we, you know, looking back, even at They Live, like, that was really kind of the last thing he did that was a real kind of character mm-hmm. piece. And there's a lot of elements of his kind of, you know, just as his personality, his real personality, not that type of persona, that was in that They Live character. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, even writing for Jack, it was just starting, Matt was writing Jack as a character that fit with Roddy. And Roddy got it immediately. As soon as he said that, like, so that we want you to be Jack, he's like, I get it, bud. And just, you know, he was Jack.
Well, I listened to Piper's, like, his podcast a lot, just to sort of get his voice and to hear him in my head. Because mm-hmm. it's like, he was one of the sweetest guys.
Yes.
But he also had, it was sort of, he had this thing where he was working all the time, and he was going from one thing to another, and it sort of paralleled, like, Jack actually was very similar to him in yep. terms of, like, being pulled in all these directions that he just clearly wanted some peace and quiet. Mm-hmm. So there's a bitter sort of irony to the whole thing.
Yeah.
And now with the feature, we're not entirely sure what we're going to do, but we have to, the fund that gave us the money for the short is a thing called the Short to Feature Program mm-hmm. through Harold Greenberg. So we have to write a feature regardless. And we're going to try to just, you know, I mean, the whole thing will be dedicated to him. Mm-hmm. And if we can get this fucking thing made. And we have, as we finished the first draft, because we were in the middle of writing it, he'll be all over the thing. Like, he will be, there'll be a lot of
Disney
stuff. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Like, it's, you know.
Because that's the thing, too. I mean, you know, for those that have seen Piper in interviews where he's not Hot Rod, where he's away from his wrestling personality, I mean, you get a sense that this man...
When he's Roderick Toombs, that's how we
exactly. Yeah. You get a sense that this is a man who... There's a real dichotomy to him in the sense, yes, on one hand, he's a sort of rough, tough guy, and I mean, he is one of the toughest son of bitches, you know, like, right. that ever stepped foot in the square circle. But on the other hand, he's a really sweet man, a man who adored his family, a man who adored his fans, adored his life, I think. And you get a real sense of his sweetness in the short, especially when, you know, when he hit with the little girl and he's calling her sweetheart amongst all this crazy
stuff. And that was him, right? That some of that stuff isn't in the script. A lot of that was just him.
I had a feeling that was ad-libbed. It just seemed like this was a real Roddy Piper.
Yeah.
And so watching it, you do get a little choked up.
He always had that little bits of, like, his own personality, his own kind of thing. Remember when I asked him about that part where They Live at the end when they're storming the television station?
Where he puts his hand on the woman.
On the secretary, he puts his hand on her. Mm-hmm. And I asked him, I said, was that, like, in the script, or is that something you just wanted to do? And you got the sense that the real Roddy, if he was in that situation, that's exactly what he would do. Like, it's okay, don't worry about it.
It's the scene near the end of They Live when it's all the big, the dust up has happened, and he's running through the TV studio, and there's guns blazing, and he asks some terrified woman
for directions
and she just sort of nervously says down the hall, and he just puts his hand on her shoulder, just gently
on her hand.
The table yeah. And that was it.
Thank you, dear, kind of thing. And it's just like, look, I'm not here for you. It was perfect.
He was so unexpectedly, not touchy-feely, but warm, a little touchy-feely.
He was
just really warm. It was like I couldn't have been more happy with the whole thing. He was just such a delight from beginning to end.
Yeah.
It is such a fucking tragedy.
It is. I was. I mean, it's been a rough year all around for deaths, and I'm talking, you know,
personally. and professionally.
And, yeah, exactly. And people in, you know, the industry.
Yeah,
and, you know,
it's our age now too. I think.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, you're hearing, you know, this person died, Christopher Lee. You know,
yeah, Wes Craven.
Wes Craven.
Oh man.
And yeah. Then, but yeah, I mean, when I remember just like, you know, turning on the internet. No, not Piper. Not Piper.
No, he's young.
Yeah,
60, like 62. You know, yeah, like it was just kind of like you would always have this kind of, you know, you're starstruck, and then even when you're, you know, like for instance, he had his Hall of Fame WWE ring,
mm-hmm.
and I was like, what is it? Is that a Hall of Fame ring? And just before he took it off, he immediately was like, yep, here, you want to try it on?
Wow.
You know, like I didn't even ask. I didn't even do, like, you know what I mean? Like, you know, I don't know. And like even if you're gonna go pose it with a picture with him or something like that, you would stand up and you don't want to get too close to him. He would grab that person. He would put his arm around them and he would hold them tight.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
he was so appreciative of his fans.
Yeah,
and he was just so giving. I think, you know, that's just the way he was. He said, you know, I said at one point, I said, thank you so much for doing this. It means the world. He goes, thank you for writing this. You're keeping me alive.
Yeah, yeah.
Keeping me. So it's like that's just the way he was. He was so grateful and sweet. I can't see a negative thing about the guy.
Now, in addition to Piper, you had another tremendous talent working on this, and this is someone behind the scenes, and that's Stephen Kostanski.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Did the effects. I am... what can I say about Kostanski? He's an absolute genius. I mean, yeah. You know, I love... You know, he's part of the Astronaut 6 Collective.
Yeah.
And, of course, he directed Manborg, which is unbelievably amazing, and Biocop, which is an amazing little short.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, tell me about Stephen.
Well, that's more of his connection than mine. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've gotten to know him, but...
Yeah, I met Steve through Todd Brown, through another feature that I had in development.
He's our exec producer, and he's at my YZ films.
Mm-hmm.
So I sat down with Steve on a feature again that I had in development a while back, and I was going through some character designs and stuff like that, and then I got to know him and his pictures and all the stuff that he does and stuff, and he's just a huge, huge talent, just a one-man gang, you know, and...
It's incredible.
Yeah.
The fact that, I mean, that he's a practical effects maestro, and mm-hmm. he pretty much is all himself.
Mm-hmm. But even on the post end, too, like, he can do the digital, he mm-hmm. can do everything, he can write, you know what I mean, direct, everything. He's kind of the, I think, what the future is for a lot of kind of, you know, filmmakers now. They get the young person that can come and that can do the entire thing.
Mm-hmm. It is amazing. Like, when you... Because Viv took me to see Manborg. I had never even heard of it. Remember, it was you, Mark, and I?
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, we're going to go see this movie, Manborg, at the Royal. And I went, I don't know what this is. And it blew me away. It was amazing. And that was my introduction to Steve. Mm-hmm. Was just like, Jesus Christ, this guy wrote, directed, did everything, all this entire film in his basement for no money.
Mm-hmm.
Or in his garage, right? Mm-hmm. And it was like one of those eye-openers of, okay, this guy has... real talent. Mm-hmm. And then getting to know him on this and on set and watching him do stuff, he's the real deal. He's phenomenal.
Tireless.
Yeah.
And just, you know,
and knows his stuff, like, you know, instinctively or something. I mean, he's like all of us that grew up, you know, reading Fangoria and Gorezone,
mm-hmm.
but then took it to the next level mm-hmm. where he really, he's fucking Corey Feldman and
right.
Yeah,
no, you get the sense that he's like, it's almost like when you think about he's making this in his garage, and you almost get the sense like he's like this mad scientist, you know? Just
kind of. His studio stuff. Feels like that.
But you walk through the studio, and then there's just like the most random shit.
Yeah.
And I'll be like, what the hell is this for? And he's like, I don't know if I'm allowed to say it. Like, but he'll just tell me, and they're not full films,
mm-hmm.
they're just small vignettes of things that he wants to do. And that's amazing because he can do all that stuff. Like, we can come up with ideas for different, like, kind of monsters or blips or what have you like that. But he acts on it, and he executes it. And they're amazing, and it's... You had to be able to fulfill those, like, you know, visions, so to speak.
He's like a real artist in the sense that it's one of those things where art always amazes me when you just have... It's like magic. And I just go, I don't know how the fuck he did that.
Yeah.
I just don't know.
And he's an incredibly nice guy.
Yeah, yeah.
I've been meeting him a number of times. In fact, I saw him at a convention, uh-huh. and, you know, I was say hi, and he was selling a little bust of Biocop.
Yeah, I have it, actually.
Too, yes.
Yeah.
And, you know, I also have a Biocop t-shirt. I love that character. And I said, Steven, I want to buy a Biocop. And he goes, really? You actually want to buy it? Fuck yeah, this is the greatest character in like the last, you know, 10 years. He's humble, he's nice, and super talented.
We got really lucky on this with everybody. Sort of really, no one was a pain.
No, definitely.
And not that if anyone was, I'd say it, but no one was a pain.
Now, obviously, so I when you move on to the future, I don't even want to speculate on who you're going to recast.
We have no idea.
Whoever has tremendously large boots to fill.
Yeah.
And that's an unintentional segue, because I want to talk to you, Viv, because I was looking at your IMDb, and I saw you're working on, you're in post-production on a Bruno and Boots movie.
Yes. A bit of a one,
yes. And,
nothing like this.
It's not genre, but I gotta tell you, growing up, I was a huge Gordon Corman fan.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
a huge
absolutely.
Bruno and Boots fan, yeah. So I'm...
We're in post right now, and tomorrow I'll look at the first full cut,
mm-hmm.
So I'm excited to see. But yeah, no, same thing. I was huge, like Gord Corman fan, Bugs Potter, Bruno Boots, all that. And it was kind of like Aircraft, who was one of our producers. They had this in development,
mm-hmm.
And we were just kind of talking about it, and they told me about it and stuff, and then it all just kind of fell together.
And we had just done a short.
Yeah.
Viv did an excellent job. Mm-hmm. They needed a director for the feature. It all just sort of...
Yeah, it was weird, and it was amazing.
It's the most fun I've ever heard him have.
Well, when I was young, Gordon Corman came to my school, and I did a reading, and it was like fucking Michael Jackson. Like, I was just...
What grade is this? Like, I didn't read any of it.
Six, seven.
Well, we would never sign Gordon Corman, but, we all read it.
That's what I'm saying.
That was the first book... Like I was a horrible student, and I mean horrible, like D's, straight D's, mm-hmm. did not do a thing. That was the first book, assigned reading, mm-hmm. that I actually read.
Oh, was it assigned? See, that was the thing, is I was terrible. I was reading Stephen King in grade 5. not to brag, but I just didn't read the stuff I was told to read.
No, exactly. Well, that was the first bit. I wouldn't read anything, and that was the only book that actually was like, oh, okay, this is great, and I liked it, and it was fun, and what have you.
Mm-hmm.
But after that, there was nothing. But
well, there's always like a rebellious spirit in his writing,
mm-hmm, definitely.
But it's like young adult, like teens. It's, yes. Okay. Again, I just never read that stuff.
It was, Bugs Potter was this one book. I really like. That was my favorite book. It was Bugs Potter, and it's just about this kid who would just this drumming like dynamo. This kid, and he would just sneak out in the middle of the night and go just drum at bars. At this point, and people would go berserk, but no one knew who he was. And then eventually, he'd be selling out theaters or big arenas and shit.
Again, when I was that age, I was into clowns and sewers that were eating children.
Oh, well, I definitely was too. But this is when you're in class. What are you gonna do?
I guess if it's a sign, I don't. I don't feel like an asshole for saying, but I never read that stuff. But
no,
honestly, it didn't. I feel like I lost some kind of child. I missed a childhood. There was like a couple of years there where I just sort of I jumped. Tracks into more adult stuff.
No, my Stephen King reading came in grade, I'd say, 6.
Yeah, so, yeah, it's around that era. It's like when you're 12, you're prepubescent, and mm-hmm. that stuff starts coming in, and you just start devouring it.
Mm-hmm. And then you sort of say, okay, Gordon Corman, unfortunately, you sort of put that aside. Like, this is the real shit right here, but yeah. So, Bruno Boots, what else are you guys working on?
Well, I have this TV series called Michael Tuesdays and Thursdays on the CBC that we're going to do another 6 episodes of
mm-hmm.
next, that'll air next fall. We're just starting the scripts now, and we'll shoot that in Ottawa in April, a couple other things that I'm developing, but our main focus is really the feature.
Yeah.
I want to get that done. Yeah. It's so... hard to navigate this mm-hmm. because of everything with losing Piper,
right.
But also the harsh reality is the momentum. We've got we got into TIFF, and then Piper died days later.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been this like real, and every day it's like another festival's picking it up.
Yeah.
It's like, fuck.
Oh yeah, no, I mean this is great. Like, this is something that I've heard of.
So we have to use that momentum, and we want to do the feature. Like it is, it's a dream, and I think he would be unhappy if we didn't move forward. Mm-hmm. So it's we're gonna just try to get this thing done.
Mm-hmm.
And enjoy it too, because I mean, you know, we're having a blast right now.
And TIFF is your world premiere.
Right? Yes,
it is. Okay, it is.
And so I'm sure the reaction is going to be insane for it.
It's going to be interesting. We're also playing in Austin at the Fantastic Fest. Okay. That just got announced yesterday.
Yeah, yeah.
And we're excited for the reaction there too, because it's more genre based. Like, it's so hard to tell with TIFF because it's TIFF.
Yeah.
I love TIFF, but yeah, it's not really a genre festival.
True, true.
No, and definitely, it's going to be, I think they try to, you know, group the short programs the best they can, but also it's like, you know, I had a short in TIFF like a while ago, and it's not really the similar tone, but somewhat. And yeah, it's definitely eclectic, you know, and so yeah, we'll see. So
it means a lot in terms of being from here. Right, to TIFF. Like it's a big deal. But.
Well, we always, that was the thing too, was when we did the short, we always wanted it to be, like, TIFF was our target.
We thought it'd be really funny. So. It's like, there's something slightly, because I feel like, you know, there used to be much more of a mischievous element to TIFF. There used to be these sort of like, you know, like when McKellar was, he's a good friend of mine, but he's never going to listen to this. So when he was younger, there was more of like a subversive element to him.
Right,
I don't think it's there anymore. So
we were talking about that before you guys showed up. I came a bit early. We were talking about how TIFF has changed over the years.
Yeah, so for us, it's like getting a film in TIFF called Portal to Hell. It's like, you know, it's kind of a nice little achievement, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
To
absolutely.
Go along with all the sort of more... adult Canadian serious films, like, you know, it was like, and it was one of those things where we said, look, we're making this genre piece, there's blood and guts in it, but it's going to be a good film. That's what it had to be at the end of the day. So,
and we had a lot of notes about that, and we stuck to our guns. Like, we can't give you any spoilers, obviously, but there was definitely there's definitely a lot of things that happen in there that people are like, no, you can't do that. You know, you're going to lose your audience, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I mean, the first death was something that we, you know, had, there was some bump up against that.
Well, yeah, I can see why, for a TIFF audience.
Rue Morgue did an article 2 months ago that was just all about that and how you can get away with it. In films, as long as it's justified. We're doing it.
Yeah. Well, I know the momentum is building, and we are at Really Awful Movies are going to do everything we can to spread the word. It's been a pleasure talking to both of you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah.
No problem. And I wish you the best of luck.
Thanks.
Awesome. Help. Thank you.